It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Who needs the sun when you got Louisville?
Consequence Podcast Network.
Jorge Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan, additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks, as always, for making your way here, checking out the series. I do hope you'll hit that subscribe button. I put out 3 new interviews every single week, new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, at Spotify, Podchaser, NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. That's me, Kyle Meredith, today catching up with Ricky Lee Jones, one of my favorite singer-songwriters of all time. I could not count the hours that I have spent with her music. And this time, we get to talk about her latest album called Pieces of Treasure. It's her first record of standards that focuses specifically on the American songbook. So Ricky Lee Jones is going to tell us about reuniting with producer Russ Titelman. Russ co-produced her first two records and taking control of her story with the recent autobiography Last Chance Texaco, Chronicles of an American Troubadour. Ricky Lee is also going to discuss what it means to sing songs that are steeped in a bygone male-dominated era and giving a new mystical sound to the song Nature Boy, one of the greatest songs ever written. And digging up her very first publicity photo for the cover arts. So here we are, taped from a basement in Louisville, Kentucky. It's Kyle Meredith with Ricky Lee Jones.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Good. I have a memory of Louisville. I went there, and there's a big, I think it's Louisville, big fancy hotel, right? And you got a big old-timey cigar-smoking hotel there, next to a river. So I went out walking by the river and a big dead cow floated by. And I took a picture, but the picture didn't show the scope. You know, it just looks like a little toy cow going by. But, you know, to see you had had really bad floods, which we read about, but until you actually see it in person, it's hard to understand.
We had a house down on the river. And sure enough, flooded twice while I lived there. And we don't live there anymore. No dead cows, though, fortunately. So.
Well, cows, I love them, but they're not very smart. And they probably drowned a lot more than they need to. The other thing about Louisville, though, is that don't you have a Muhammad Ali Museum or some kind of, yeah. So that's pretty cool. Yeah. I like it.
He's buried not far from my house right here. It's probably 2 miles, maybe 3 at the most. So beautiful, beautiful graveyard out there. Colonel Sanders is in the same graveyard, and right. And the sisters that wrote Happy Birthday, they're also right there close to him. And
they partying late at night, eating chicken and singing Happy Birthday.
It's not as good as a New Orleans graveyard, but it's all right.
I had a great idea, but I don't know if I should say it, but I'm going to say it anyway, because I'll probably never do it. It's to create a game, a board game called, you know, the spirit realm or something. And as I was thinking, I'll play my five ghosts against your two pixies. And I thought of it, that would be a good game, you know.
I'd get on board for that. Why not? Well, let me get into this interview officially here, and congratulate you. I think that's the proper way to say it on Pieces of Treasure. It really is. It's such a beautiful piece. You know, when it comes as the singles, and we hear a little bit here and a little bit here, you're like, that's really nice and everything. And I mean that in absolute respect. But there is something about hearing the album as a full piece, to use that word. It is such a beautiful creation that you've done here. So I really do mean this. Congratulations on this.
Thank you. Yeah, it wouldn't be my choice to release it piecemeal, but it does get people talking about it and come to it. And so, and what a better thing than if you went, well, that single was the best part of the album, which so often is the truth. I'm glad. It's my instinct to create a piece, right? So I'm glad that that you get it and that we did it with this group of other people's songs. We were lucky. I mean, I could claim it with Russ, but something fantastic happened beyond our control. It grew into something really beautiful.
So, you know, the obvious parts here. This is the first time that you've done the American Songbook specifically. The easy question, why?
Well, because I'm American. What did I do? You know, I think I did it for Russ Teitelman, and it was in part to create these bridges to our old friendship. Because the moment I met him again and saw how full of music he is, I knew it, you know, it's always the right thing for me to be generous. And if I'm generous with whatever little bit I have, I'll get so much back. But if I went, I think I want a young guy I want Andre 3000 or whatever I want. But I went, this is a powerful friendship. And he's a great producer. I'm going to go with whatever he says he wants to do. I think it's time for me to stop running everything and just play the singer. And so that's the only part I had control over, which was to say, I'm not going to have control over everything. I'm just going to be the singer. And in doing that, I think that's my best role. You know, I think I can do lots of jobs, but I'm best if I can just be a singer. Or maybe a singer-songwriter, but make that one job. That's a long answer, but that's really how it came to be.
And of course, for those, you know, who have followed your career, they'll know Russ's name. But for those who don't, he was part of the production team of your first two records. And, you know, and there is that idea. I don't know if I'm not projecting here. It's more of a question. But there's that idea that if you're teaming with someone from that far in your past, is there that sense of also trying to recapture something?
Totally. And probably wanting to recapture some sense of glory. But I think both he and I know very well at our age, I mean, he's a bit older than me, but it would be muddy and unpleasant water to try to revisit the past. You're always throwing your fishing pole into the future, right? But clearly there was some magic between us when we worked together. So maybe what we work on now, there'll be some magic. Maybe they won't. Maybe it's dead as dead can be. But dead as dead can be. But that's all we can do is try. But it would be a lie to say, oh, no, I wasn't thinking about anything like that. And the other thing to tell people who don't know is that the first two records were, besides being acclaimed, really pushed the musical culture, you know, from the line it was on to a wider line, I think, from the folk rock thing into a more, a little more black, a little more rhythm and blues, a little more jazz, and people talking about it a little bit now, which is really gratifying, because I was watching the years go by and went, so this is what history is. People who don't know write their point of view many years later, and it becomes fact. So I wrote a memoir, and now I begin to talk about the truth of things. You know, growing up a Catholic girl, it was a vanity to say, this is the truth. It was a vanity to ring your own bell. You look to others to ring the bell. But as years go by, and my fans, you know, are there, but I thought the true nature of me is being reshaped into something that isn't me at all. And, you know, when I do these interviews, I never have any idea who I'm going to be, what I'm going to start talking about. But there, Russ Titelman and Lenny Waronker produced so many great singer-songwriter albums, as well as Russ did George Harrison and all those Eric Clapton records and lots of great records. So I'm privileged and lucky that he still loves my voice and me.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Ricky Lee Jones. So getting into the songs then, I'm sure you had some ideas, and I'm sure he probably had some ideas, but when it comes down to it, you know, I read your song by song that was given in the press, and it's so interesting to hear, you know, how you like There Will Never Be Another You, and how you find your way into that song, especially as you said, the glib attitude of the 1930s and quoting you, the masculine bullshit that comes in there. So I'd love to hear more about that, like, because, you know, that a lot of these songs do come from that era, and that was such a big part of it. How do you find your reflection in these songs that carry so much of that part of the story?
That's right, because they're super modern for the time. And one of the things that was super cool and super modern of the time, which was to be a little dominant. Somebody said to me, yeah, but how can you say that? He was gay. As if you're gay, you're not also a guy who's dominant. I mean, what are you talking about? I don't know. But she was talking about Cole Porter. But the exciting thing is that in their time, they're at the vanguard of points of view, shaping how people are talking, reflecting the language of the time, right? So when he's saying, but how can you say this to somebody? There's going to be a lot of other nights with other people. I know, so get lost. I was like, how am I going to say this seriously? I'll be standing here with someone new. There'll be other songs and other things. It seemed so dismissive initially. I thought, well, maybe she jilted him and he's just trying to land on his feet. Or maybe I'm just going to have to find a way to make the complex emotions that are in these words my reality, rather than the I know you and me aren't going to go very far. Because it is really beautiful. There'll never be another you. I can find that with many people I've loved and will always miss. So that's what I put my hooks in. Because singing a song is like taking a part and acting all the things about the song. I know everything about the character, what she's wearing, where she's sitting, who she loved. And it will always be that way. Once I commit to sing a song, I will always have that character with me. So I'm very careful about whose point of view I allow to become my point of view. You know what I mean? Because for me, they're never just singing, you know, my home is in the Blue Ridge Mountains. It's singing a song that I construct into myself and put myself into. How about that?
Well, that's it. So do all the characters then become you? Is that what you're saying? Or do you still kind of keep a cast flowing in your head as well?
Does one cancel out the other? I think that, the person or people that I am when I sing We Belong Together are still exactly who they were in 1983. But then when I sing Take a Walk Around Midnight, then I'm that girl, Does that answer what you said?
I talk to a lot of film and TV actors as well, and one of the things I'm always interested in is, are they able to leave the character after the set? Or do they do is that do they carry that on their back the whole time? When you're doing an album like this, and even knowing that you all recorded this in 5 days, and I'm sure it was a longer process than just those 5 days, but still, like do you carry these characters after the microphone is off?
Wonderful question, but I have the feeling that no. I've often described them as houses, which is a better way to say I go into the house when I sing the song, and it's always the same. The window's always here, which is saying if I leaned this way, it can be a sadder song, or if I lean that way, I'll find the humor in it. But it's always that same structure, and I think I'm not bothered by them. If there's no ghost realm game being played here, no, I don't think so. But the ones that I write are a com it's a complex relationship with them because they are my unconscious being funneled into, order. And then a melody put to it, which is pure emotion, and will always be the way into emotion for anybody who sings it. And it can be trouble because if it's created from some terrible despair, that will be waiting for me whenever I sing it. So they can get heavy, but they are just songs, and post-traumatic stress is not the song. So eventually, you got to deal with everything. Did that answer that question?
Yeah,
I mean,
and Launch is another one actually, because also knowing that you have your own memories tied to these, you talk about your father introducing you to several of these, and then does that become, I hope I'm not getting too heady with this question, does that become then its own compromise because now you're creating sort of something new out of the song, but yet it's tied to something so personal in your past?
I don't see any compromise because as long as you're creating art, a thing is growing. It's not creating and keeping it as it was that will kill it. So it's nice that my dad taught me these songs, and it makes all the ways I'm going to look for a new way to do it more profound somehow. So if dad taught me, listen, grab your coat, sunny side of the street. These two songs I sang to audition for the Lou King show when I was 8 years old. That was a local Phoenix talent show for kids. Went in swinging. I might never have a set, but I'm rich as Rockefeller, right? Just giving it my all. So when I go to do it now, all the history with it of auditioning, and maybe my grandpa doing it on vaudeville, and that afternoon my dad taught it to me. They're all there. So there's a sweet, bittersweet, sentimental thing right away. And then it opens up for a brand new interpretation of the song, I think.
I
So
love
that's
that.
why all you're hearing is a slow version, right, of it. But all the things you feel, I suspect, have to do with all the things I'm feeling as I sing it.
And I think I can pick so many different examples on these songs. You did Nature Boy. Nature Boy is, I mean, top five songs of all time for me, if I got to pick them, right? Like, it's just one of those songs. And seeing it on the track list and then hearing what you did with it, like I was like, oh my God, what is that instrument? And what, sorry, and lost it again. What is that instrument? I called it, an Eastern guitar.
It's a oud. It's a, I think my fellow is Armenian, and his father was, or is, I don't know if he's still alive, the premier oud player who lived in the country. So this like the great, I wouldn't compare it to the great banjo player, but it's you know, it's a revered instrument over there. And here too.
Yeah, right. But to still find something new in a song like that, I mean, you've got this somewhat definitive Nat King Cole version. You know, I've got Bowie over my shoulder. He did a great version for Moulin Rouge, I believe, that soundtrack. You know, to still find something new to do with this song, I'm like, that's incredible, by the way. How did you all land on that?
I think I just thought of it as a Cosmo. You know, when I saw it, they seem like they're in the Cosmo. If they're traveling, I met a boy, a very strange, enchanted boy. So we're going to have to go somewhere that's strange and enchanting to us, right? And it must have just reminded me of a place far away in the Mideast. And Russ said, I've got it, the oud. So you should know how we constructed that was we played it in that 5-day period and left space for the oud. Then he came in and he played 3 solos. And then I said, let's just have him play. I mean, the solo is not enough of this instrument. So he played 2 times. He played for a couple minutes. And then we just put that in the front of the song.
That's fantastic. Yeah. And in space, you mentioned space. I wrote even that it's all in the game. It's being comfortable with pacing and space and air. Like there's so many people who just couldn't handle that.
That's what I'm all about. Making people uncomfortable. Yeah, I think that when you draw it out like that and even leave space for a solo that never happens, then you're listening to how tenderly everybody's playing. And it keeps the emphasis on the voice.
The cover photo, I wanted to ask about that, because where does that come from?
That's the first publicity picture I ever did before I got signed. I was sure of the photographer, but when I talked to her, she said, I didn't take that picture. And so I was like, oh, wow, this really is mysterious. It was in my drawer all these years and in a little sheet of plastic. So when I was trying so hard to find some kind of art to represent this work, because if you hit the wrong thing, And what I saw was an iconic picture of an iconic woman, and that is what we've created. We've created another great group of music that easily represents how things might be done in the future. But either way, they are, I hate to use this, I was going to say the brand, but they are Ricky Lee Jones, right? Even though we think of this music as sophisticated and oh, so subtle, and there's nothing very subtle about the picture. But somehow, of all my choices, this seemed like, and why do we do a cover anyway? So you'll look. So they're going to look at this.
It is. It's iconic in so much of what you've done. And let me say that specifically. Your music has meant so much to me all across your discography, all across these decades. Thank you so much for continuing to do it. Pieces of Treasure is a treasure. It is a piece of treasure. I mean that. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it today, too.
Thank you for helping us take it out there to the world.
Now, while we're here, I'm going to include an interview that Ricky Lee Jones and I did back in 2015. This was a spirited conversation about politics, religion, being misunderstood, sense of place, and at that moment, her album, The Other Side of Desire. This is part 2 of Kyle Meredith with Ricky Lee Jones.
Hi, how are you?
I was not expecting French when I called.
Yes, they parlay French up here.
It was nice. How are the rehearsals going?
Fantastic. It's a really good band. It's hard to rehearse, you know, and it's just been really good. I hired these 4 guys I worked with last year, my last gig here, and also a girl who sings and plays mandolin and violin. It's going to be really fun.
Yeah.
I feel really good about it.
Why do you say the rehearsals are... Why is it hard to rehearse?
It's hard because I don't like to rehearse. I like just like to perform.
Mm-hmm.
And if something isn't quite right, you know, because everybody's always doing their best, so if something's not quite right, how do you convey to them what it is you want without, you know, it's a lot of languages, the language of the drum or the bass or the guitar. So it's stressful to, for me, you know, to be a band leader and know what to say and when to say it and how to say it to make it go right instead of wrong.
How long?
And they're really good, you know. I haven't hardly ever, I mean, it's incredible because usually there's a lot of strenuous, you know, ringing out of certain portions of some song that somebody doesn't get. It hasn't happened.
Well, I can't wait to hear these songs live myself. You've put together another great record with Other Side of Desire.
Thank you.
It's a beautiful record, and I know you've talked a little bit, quite a bit about the album at this point, especially that the title. I feel like you can flip it in so many ways. It reminds me of a Rubik's Cube. You know.
That's right. You know, that's the thing I like about language, especially in writing songs, is, you know, either the way you spell it or say it, you can have double entendre or even more than double.
Mm-hmm.
People can take it any way they want.
Yeah.
So it's funner.
And it is. There's so many different versions of what that could mean, and it's really fun. It is. It's very fun. It's playful. I know you've talked a lot about also the city, and I hear a lot of artists say that, like, oh, we went to this city because we wanted to be inspired by it, but you don't actually usually hear that within the record. It always sounds like the artist. Yet for you, your record sounds like New Orleans in every sense of the word. Like, I believe you when you say the city is so crucial to this record.
So I'm going to guess that the thing that comes through the music is what comes through in my life. And there's a kind of, I don't want to say joie de vivre because that sounds a little pretentious, but there's a thing happening in New Orleans on the streets that happens nowhere else. If you've been there, you know it. But there's something happening right now among youth. There's a bunch of tattooed kids there playing sousaphones and banjos and living a truly off the grid and making it work. There's a little bit of San Francisco 1968.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different country now, but there's something there I'm witnessing. I know I am. I'm seeing it through my own rose-colored glasses, you know. But there's a friendliness there that I never experienced in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
From every person I pass on the street, there's a sense of belonging from everybody I pass on the street. And in the West, we just don't have it. You know, we're pioneers, we're travelers, we're on our way someplace else. And to be in this place where youth is and music is and tradition all being mixed up together, I think that's what made its way into my music. Because I've always been really careful never to participate in a sound or movement that is already existing,
mm-hmm.
whether it's, you know, a big band sound or new wave or punk rockers or this scene, you know, because to me, my house is where it's happening.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And we make it happen. We're the scene. Whoever we are, you know, in your house as well. So to go there and say, I know that I want to use all this music was a real departure for me. But I think I succeeded. I think it's exciting and full of life. I don't think it's derivative. You know what I mean?
No, very much so.
I know you don't either, but I think
no, I do know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean. And it's interesting the way you talk about that, the way you talk about a movement happening, like you said, like in 1968 and all of that. One thing that surprised me a little bit about this record, with as much as you are conscious about world happenings, especially the darker side of world happenings, and I won't say crusading at all, but you know, you're very aware, and you talk about it online and everything, but that didn't exactly make it into this record. And I know you've done it in the past, but there wasn't like any politics this time around. Like, that wasn't a part of this.
I've only done that with one record.
Yeah.
I put in my life, but I only ventured out there musically one time. It was just such an awful time in America that to not say something to me would have been like being in Nazi Germany. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it took some effort to weave politics into a musical frame. It's not really my natural thing. Not that I like to, sometimes I like to voice my opinion, but even that is, you know, everybody has a right to voice their opinion, but as a public person, it's a whole other scene. It's so bizarre.
Yeah. It's probably a vague question, but, you know, here we are in America and we're going into the elections and it's all starting up again. Are you optimistic or pessimistic?
Optimistic about what?
The state of affairs, I guess.
You know, I think on a political level, on a larger level, I think that when Dwight Eisenhower warned us about the political military machine, I think, and that was like 1952 or 51 or something, I think that thing that he warned us about is so powerful and terrifying now, mm-hmm. That we probably can't even fathom what's really happening. So on the things that we might be able to affect, like women's rights, how women are perceived, or that everybody should be entitled to have free health care because we pay a huge amount of taxes. It's not free. It's we're paying for it. Mm-hmm. Or all these things, I'm a little bit optimistic that discussion and change can happen. But I'm also really pessimistic that about my country, because I think that business owns my country.
Right.
I don't think the people do anymore. And I think, I feel sometimes like they allow us to have things. I don't think we are entitled to them. You know? I feel kind of, I don't know. I'm optimistic as a person when I wake up in the morning. I'm happy to be alive. But politically, I would say no, I'm probably not. I'm probably pessimistic if I really thought about it.
And it feels like it would only just take that big public support, a wave. You see it in so many other countries. It just doesn't happen here. You kind of take what you're given almost, even when you're not happy with it.
And you say, this is what I should have. You know, it's a strange slave mentality. Like, how dare you try to give me more?
Yeah, right. I guess, you know, when I was looking at that and kind of looking at, you know, some past interviews where you've talked a little bit about this stuff, and you've even talked about spirituality, and I thought, you know, for someone who, and I might be completely misquoting you or misreading you here, but kind of found some spirituality later in life, usually you don't equate, you know, this kind of spirituality with what I would call left-leaning politics. Like, you did it different than most people, I feel like.
Yeah, I'm a unique person. I think I'm... And you know, I go to church all the time, but it's because I love the ritual of the Catholic Church. I don't in any way adhere to or feel obliged to any kind of religion. You know, I like the story of Jesus. I personally don't think he had to rise from the dead in order for his story to be interesting. But or important to us. In fact, it's what he said that matters, not that he rose from the dead. So I'd probably be exorcised from the Catholic Church. So I'm very left-wing, and yet in some places, not at all. So I guess I'm, and the spirituality, no, I've always been a very spiritual person. I've written about angels from the very beginning, and you know, my sense of God and being a part of all the world has hardly ever faltered. It has a few times, but I think I've always been interested and enchanted with the invisible world, however it offers itself to me.
I would say you're a complicated person, like most human beings. Like, it's not a black and white thing.
Hopefully most people don't just go down the party line.
Right. I was watching the there's a new documentary on Nina Simone, and I was just seeing it the other day, and it seems like both of you guys were very misunderstood in about the same way because of the way you would write about all of these things, and then, you know, because you're a complicated person is what I'm getting to, but, you know, and all that, it's, you know, going through your career a little bit misunderstood. Did you feel like that?
Sometimes. I mean, I can only guess how I'm perceived, but sometimes, depending on the decade or the half decade, or I sometimes felt I would only speak about my career, mm-hmm. the perception of me and my career. I sometimes felt like people weren't, you know, like there was a backlash against Chuckies in Love, and once that happened, that all the good work, maybe because I had no publicist or for whatever, or wasn't a part of a scene, or I just don't know. So yeah, I guess there's been times.
Yeah.
I feel so optimistic right now. It's hard to see through those eyes, but I'm pretty sure I have felt that. Yeah.
Well, I know that's, you know, you were always experimenting, and that can rub people the wrong way, and that's one reason why I love your career, you know, because you're always experimenting. Thinking about the song of the song is kind of how I've seen you, you know, get along. When you're doing that, though, does it really, at this far into the game, now you're decades into the game, do you find it difficult to find new territory?
Oh, I don't think so. You know, not so far, no. I think the curious mind always, you know, there's so much more I could do, and things I'm thinking of doing things in different ways and manifesting it, you know. I'll tell you this little scenario. I wanted to get my hair dyed red, blonde, and it was a few years ago, and I went to 4 different salons, and every single person, I swear to God, said, no, we can't dye your hair red and blonde. It wouldn't look good. And so in manifesting the vision that you see, you can meet a bunch of people who've already decided what you should do and who they think you are, right? Mm-hmm. And they won't help you do what you want to do. So it's not that I don't have visions and new ideas, but can I manifest them? We'll see.
Well, I can't wait to see where you go with everything. Again, thank you, Ricky Lee Jones. I love The Other Side of Desire, and I'm sure I will love everything that comes from here on out as well.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you, Ricky. Have a great day and a great tour.
I will. Thanks. Bye.
And my thanks to Ricky Lee Jones. Again, the new album is called Pieces of Treasure. And thanks to you, of course, for checking out the series. Please do hit that subscribe button while you're hanging around. Again, you get 3 new interviews every single week, new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, so you can keep up with your favorite artists and discover the new ones at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, at Spotify, Podchaser, NPR, WFBK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Then after that, head over to WFPK.org. It's where I do a show Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern. An hour full of song premieres and music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews. That's Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on the social media spots. That's Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all 3 of them. The address is at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always on the verge of death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan, additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. And now, save 50% on the new Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed. Limited time. Exclusively at a Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Watch out for floating cows.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.